Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
On the evening a kid half his age who idolises Cristiano Ronaldo scored a 93rd minute winner for Manchester United, sparking wild celebrations at Craven Cottage. That same Ronaldo burns all remaining bridges with a club whose support, both from fans and coaches, first catapulted him to the very top of the game, then backed him through the lot, welcomed him back despite several previous transgressions, and made him hero all over again. Of course, we'll be talking about that and Ronaldo, but let's not be a Ronaldo. Let's pay tribute to a wonderful moment as well for a young man who could hardly hide his smile by the Thames on Sunday evening. A very warm welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. Thank you for joining me, Harry Robinson, and my co-host, Jack Tate. How are we going to go about this? Well, we'll start with Garnacho, then we'll move on to Ronaldo, and then we'll look at the overall performance against Fulham in a 2-1 win for United, which will include discussion on Erik ten Hag's substitutions, Terrell Malassi at right back, and plenty more. Let's start with Garnacho. We last spoke to you all on Thursday night, and in the recordings I sent to Jack, I said something like, can't remember exactly, but the World Cup is coming round the corner and it's Argentina, not England, that Manchester is in love with at the moment. And that's ever more true after Sunday, is it not, Jack?
I don't think I've ever seen so many flags in a United away end, and it was Argentina flags that were flying at Craven Cottage, not England flags or anything related to United. It was all Argentina. And in Martinez, I think, is already developing into something of a cult hero, has obviously garnered a lot of that Argentina love that's been flowing through Old Trafford all season. And Garnacho is just adding to the party. I mean, you couldn't have written any better script. Not only the fact that it's obviously Garnacho, an 18-year-old kid playing in probably what is like 10th appearance, something like that for the club, but also the fact that it's the last game before the World Cup, literally one of the last kicks of the Premier League that we're going to see for the next 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And it's Alejandro Garnacho, a kid coming through the United Academy, which not only represents the club in that sense, but also represents, I think, a lot of what United's best players down the years have been: wingers coming off their flank inside, starting so wide on the touchline, coming in and putting the ball in the back of the net. And it feels almost poetic that it's come on a day when his idol and United's last great left winger has, you know, probably severed ties with the club.
Yeah. And the importance of the goal shouldn't be understated as well. A, his first Premier League goal, of course, but also means the United finish this pre-Christmas Premier League section. Not quite the first half of the season, but nearly. It means we finish fifth, 3 points off the Champions League spots with a game in hand on some of the teams in the top four. It's good. It's important. Corey Lennox, one of our patrons, says, is Garnacho good enough to continually let him start and be a main feature throughout the season? Or is this a flash in the pan for a player that other teams aren't used to seeing yet? The sky is clearly the limit for the boy, and it's so exciting to watch. I think we can all sympathise with the last couple of sentences. Yeah, it was a brilliant moment. And Garnacho does give us something entirely different. He holds, as you were saying, so wide. He gets this kind of the typical old-fashioned coach's expression, chalk on his boots. He gets sometimes like lost in the advertising boards when you're watching on TV. It's so wide. That's probably partly because I'm colorblind and my brother is as well. But anyway, but he gives us, it's like acceleration and pace and confidence and belief. And then throw on top of that a good understanding of the game. We're yet to see quite how good it is. And a couple of skills here and there, a couple of just moments of brilliance and invention and creativity. He's got a lot that United's other players don't have.
Yeah, I think it's just a dynamism that I don't think many other players in the United team has. Rashford has it at times, but I think Garnacho, to be honest, has it probably more consistently than Rashford does.
For now.
For now, yeah, exactly. Because Rashford was kind of like that when he first came in. And I think that is something that it goes a little bit the more you play because you sort of pick and choose your moments. But I mean, to answer the question of how much can we trust Garnacho, I don't really think the problem is can we trust him and is he good enough? I think, to be honest, the bigger problem, I mentioned this a little bit after the Thursday game, is just where's he going to fit in? Because the problem for Garnacho and the problem for United is just that we're again back in this situation where we have a plethora of players that all want to play on the left. You know, now I'd be hesitant, I've mentioned this before, I'd be hesitant to move Rashford out of his left wing spot, considering how well he's been playing this season, starting on the left. Garnacho and Rashford, neither of them seem to want to play on the right very much. And in any case, we've got Antony playing out there. So honestly is going to be the biggest chance. There will be chances, especially right after the World Cup, is going to be Garnacho's biggest chance.
Yeah.
If England get relatively far in the competition, he's going to come in and you would imagine probably start a few games in a row.
Yeah, but not just that, but also second half of this season is going to be just as busy and packed as the first half of it, or at least as the last 6 weeks or so. Everyone is well aware there are very few gaps in the schedule. There's so few gaps that we currently can't fit a couple of games in against Crystal Palace and Leeds. So there will be a need to rotate. And I think Ten Hag would appreciate the ability to rotate that hasn't really been on offer so far. But I think the key question that Corey's getting at is kind of what you were hinting at, that Rashford had that dynamism, Antony Elanga had that dynamism when he came in, plenty of youth players do. It comes from a confidence and belief that you have when you have pretty much never made a mistake at senior level, when you're just on an absolute buzz, when all your mates are still playing in youth football and you're godlike in comparison. And there's no getting away from that. The buzz and the ego you must get from it is just enormous. Have you seen a player maintain that kind of just relentless confidence and belief? Maybe Ronaldo.
Not off the top of my head, honestly.
Yeah.
And I think it's just hard to sustain anything like that, because you have, like, Garnacho hasn't experienced any difficult times in the first team yet.
Yeah.
And that will come at some point, as it comes for everyone.
And
maybe
opponent.
That's why someone like Ronaldo is the only people that don't have it, because they don't face hard times very often.
Yeah, but Corey's other point is that will the opposition work him out? And there is obviously a bit of that, that the more you play, the more the opponent knows what to expect, because at the moment he's putting fear into fullbacks. And that's especially why Ten Hag brought him on against Fulham, because he knew that his opposite number was on a booking.
And he's obviously benefited as well from coming on, you know, after, what was it, 70 minutes. And, you know, if that ball from Eriksen was played in the fifth minute of the game, he's probably not making up that ground on Dico Dovereed, because Garnacho's fresh. Dico Dovereed's played 90 minutes. But I think the thing with Garnacho, he will get worked out a little bit, as every player in the world does after they burst onto the scene. But I think I mentioned this last time we talked about Garnacho, I think what I'm so impressed by him and why I think this is more sustainable than someone like an Antony Elanga is that I think when Elanga came in and played well last season, it was mainly him getting himself into good positions, having quite good movement, and then the quality on the ball was still lacking. With Garnacho, he's got both things. It is that, you know, he's making some really good runs. Defenders maybe haven't quite worked out how to play against him, but the quality on the ball is at a really, really good level. And even if the defender works him out, even if teams maybe get a better sense of how to play against him, if you have that quality, that's going to carry him through. Even if he is, you know, maybe getting marked a lot tighter or isn't being given the space to make those out-to-in runs, even if he's just receiving the ball to feet with a man on him, when you have that quality, you can still produce really good moments. I mean, some of the balls that were being pinged out to him were not easy balls to control. And every single time, his first touch is beautiful. You know, I think what stood out to me about Garnacho is obviously he's very quick. Like we said, he made up so much ground on Dico Dovereed. He's very skillful. But I think what allows him to even use all that ability with his feet that he has is that every single time he gets the ball, it's one touch and it's down immediately at his feet and he can go. So much of the problem with young players is that they have this ability to beat a man. They have great pace to burn. But if it takes you two or three touches to get the ball down and settle to when you can dribble, you're going to let the other team get a man back and you're going to be faced with 2v1s every single time. Garnacho can isolate his man so often because he gets the ball down, he allows him to dribble immediately after he receives.
And he's good at making space for himself. And he's because he holds so wide as well. And that's the kind of thing that opponents will pick up on. But when they do, he can then add a bit more variety to his game. So at the moment, he's holding incredibly wide and the fullback's not quite as wide. So as soon as the ball comes to him, the two things that give him the space to work in are A, the touch that you've just spoken about, which has been really good so far, but also the fact that he's just is quite a distance away from his marker. Opponents will work that out and will start putting their, if he's going to be starting for United, they will tell their fullback to stay a little bit wider, or maybe a midfielder to come back and stay on Garnacho if he really is offering that quality. But then he can add some variety to his game and come inside and change that kind of starting position he has. But I think,
and what if that I've does happen, maybe his biggest benefit will be he's going to create space for everyone else around him too. You know, if he's wide and the fullback's dragged out, there leaves more space for Martial or Fernandez, whoever it might be, that can take up that space that's just been left behind.
Yeah. I think what I'm most impressed with, having watched him pretty much weekly for the last 2 or 3 years since he joined the under-18s from Atletico Madrid, is the improvement he's already shown this year that I don't think is just about confidence or belief or ego. In the way he's added variety to his game over summer, he is adding variety already. He can add a lot more in terms of how often he takes it with his left foot or right foot, how often he cuts inside, how often he goes outside, and how much he's improved his decision-making already as well. Because if I think back to he's had two big moments this year. One was on Sunday evening, the biggest one, but also the FA Youth Cup final, where he scored two goals in that 3-1 win in front of 67,000 people or something.
Still, he scored again. His seventh goal of the Youth Cup run. He is the star of the Youth Cup run, and he has definitely won the Youth Cup for Manchester United here tonight.
I thought the Youth Cup final performance from him was actually pretty poor, and I would I'd be very surprised if after that game, not immediately after, while the celebrations weren't going, but at some point in the week after that, the coaches didn't say to him, actually, the way you played there wasn't good enough. You scored two goals. That's what you went out to do. That's great. But I rechecked my notes for this a couple of weeks ago when I was making some notes on Garnacho, and my notes from the Youth Cup final sat in the press box were at least 5 or 6 in the first half, where I had kind of a mark down against his name for a mistake in his decision making, where so often he should have passed and he shot instead from kind of unrealistic angles from too far out, or he chose the wrong pass, or he loads of things like this. It was a great moment, but the difference in the decision making from that game into the first team, a much harder environment, I've been so impressed with. Because that people would ask me my opinion on Garnacho, and I'd say that would be one of the things I say, is that the decision making and the attitude that made him do that Youth Cup performance and got him all the headlines, and that was brilliant, but I thought it wasn't right. I didn't think it was a good sign long term, and he's improved that massively. I also loved, I mean, the other things he needs to improve on are just bulk up. And I think he was in Argentina's 28-man preliminary squad. That was cut down to 26, and he was one of the two that missed out. Perhaps Argentina will regret that, because he's still technically allowed to go and swap back to Spain. But we spoke about this with David De Gea recently, and we actually spoke about this about Ronaldo's first spell ages ago. He now has Garnacho 4 weeks to have a bit of a break, have the limelight taken off him, which I think is another good thing, and to bulk up and to get himself Premier League ready for the second half of the season. And that's a massive opportunity for him.
I mean, he's going to get, you know, a month now of pretty much undivided attention from Erik ten Hag, and an amazing opportunity to work and, you know, get some really intense training done. Like you said, bulk up a little bit and as much as you can in the next month. But he's also set up to have a really good opportunity when the World Cup ends and United come back. You know, all of those other players that we mentioned that are playing out wide in Rashford and Antony, kind of the two shoo-ins in those positions, both have a very good chance to go long into this World Cup. It's then kind of down to Garnacho and Sancho as the two players that won't be going to the World Cup in those positions to really take that position by the scruff of the neck when football comes back. Because, I mean, certainly for the League Cup game against Burnley that is happening literally, I think, two days after the World Cup final. Then the World Cup final's on Sunday. The Burnley game is on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So
Tuesday or Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah, so it'll be almost definitely Garnacho and Sancho starting those games. The first Premier League game on Boxing Day is only 8 days, I think, after the World Cup final. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities for Garnacho and Sancho in particular. And this is a huge, this is not an opportunity that you ever normally get in any kind of normal season. You know, to have a month purely on the training ground and with a smaller squad to make a huge difference. And I'm excited for what we might see coming back off the World Cup, because Garnacho should get a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. And potentially against some tired defenders as well, if they've been involved in the World Cup. The final thing before we talk about Ronaldo is just his character. There's been quite a lot of discussion about this. And even in the commentary just after the goal, such had been the level that the Sky Sports commentators, Martin Tyler and Gary Neville, have been talking about his attitude and about how Ten Hag and Fernandes have referenced it, that their immediate reaction to the goal was to kind of reference that conversation. Probably a little bit overblown. I fully understand why they did it, because that's kind of how commentary works. But the conversation around it's probably been a little bit overblown. But it's clear he has an ego that will need reining back. But as long as there is always someone there to rein that ego back, that's a good thing, in my opinion. That is, he has that unquantifiable and almost kind of undescribable. He has that ability and confidence that you say, yeah, he's got it. And there's not many other ways to sum it up. And it's that kind of, yeah, he's got that United in him. And Fulham, I mean, Fulham fans were booing him aged 18. That's a sign, a good one. And I loved seeing at the end, the kind of uncontrollable smile he was giving off, because I've spoke to him a couple of times last year in my work with the club, and interviewed him. And this is clearly, and people know this if they follow his Instagram or have just followed his career at all, and kind of how he celebrates and all of this stuff. He's obviously someone who's fairly obsessed by his appearance, as many footballers are, taking after Ronaldo. And the way that the way his smile kind of broke through in those celebrations, kind of, I thought, told a story of just how buzzing he was with it. There was no kind of, he couldn't hold, there was no kind of pretensions about his celebration. It kind of, or the emotion just kind of all flooded through. And I thought, that made me very happy on Sunday evening and made my weekend. We're going to have to move on to something less that's going to take the smile off our faces, which is a great shame, isn't it?
I guess we've got to get into it.
Yeah. Let's start with the facts for those who are lucky enough to not be eternally doom scrolling on Twitter. So
it's a fact. I am not playing mind games. I am talking about facts.
At 10 PM on Sunday, Piers Morgan, the all round wet wipe bootlicker and immoral so-called journalist, revealed a clip from a 90-minute interview with Cristiano Ronaldo that will air on Wednesday and Thursday night this week. In the clips that followed over the next hour or so, and a few articles with the Sun newspaper of all people, various quotes from Ronaldo were released along the lines of these four conclusions. I think one, he said he felt betrayed by United. Two, he said he felt he was being forced out of United by Ten Hag, but also other senior figures at the club. Three, he said he didn't respect Ten Hag because Ten Hag doesn't have respect for him. And four, he said he didn't know who Ralf Rangnick was when he was appointed interim manager at United. United released no statement on Sunday night, preferring to shine a light on Garnacho's goal, including with what I thought at least was a beautifully timed tweet of a video of that goal at 10 PM, which I liked. United then said this on Monday afternoon. They said, Manchester United notes the media coverage regarding an interview by Cristiano Ronaldo. The club will consider its response after the full facts have been established. Our focus remains on preparing for the second half of the season and continuing the momentum, belief and togetherness being built among players, manager, staff and fans. It's some pointed adjectives and nouns in that statement from United, the togetherness especially. Jack, I'm trying to remember an equal display of a lack of self-awareness in football, and I'm struggling to think of one like this other than in 2009 when Cristiano Ronaldo, the same one, a year after the largest financial crisis of a lifetime, described himself as a slave while playing for Manchester United.
The only thing that comes to mind is anywhere sort of close to this is the Lukaku interview last year when he was at Chelsea.
Yeah.
Begging for a move back to Inter Milan. Although, to be fair, in that case, I get the feeling that Lukaku was maybe a little bit more sure of sort of what he was trying to do in that interview. I mean, I think before we even get to what he said, I think everything you need to know about this interview, you can know from the fact that it took place with Piers Morgan and was aired in the Sun newspaper. Mm-hmm. And if you want to talk about a lack of self-awareness, you know, that is, first things first, before you even get into what was actually said in the interview, doing anything like that, firstly, to me, it shows how far he's fallen, that Piers Morgan is sort of his only ally as such in the media. And it's just a lack of self-awareness in the north of England, especially putting anything in the Sun newspaper. It just shows a complete lack of understanding of what that community has been through. And then on to what he's actually said. Look, the thing is, right, I think about all of this, is if Ronaldo had done this last season, I think he would have got a lot of support. Because I think we all saw that this club was sort of falling apart to some degree. There was a complete lack of direction. And actually, at least from what we've seen so far, we obviously haven't seen the whole interview, but a lot of the quotes that has come out from the clips that have been put out on Twitter and stuff, Ronaldo is actually making some decent points. A lot of it kind of calling out the Glazers, calling out the club for their old infrastructure. Fine. But this, A, is not the right time to do that. And then B, coming out and saying that you don't respect Erik ten Hag because he doesn't respect you. I mean, that is just absolutely ridiculous. Let alone is it ridiculous to call out your own manager publicly, no matter what the circumstances. But Erik ten Hag has done absolutely nothing to show that he's disrespected Cristiano Ronaldo. If anything, you could argue he's given Ronaldo too many chances.
Yeah, just to run through a few of the examples. To begin with, he comes in a few days after Ronaldo doesn't join the preseason tour. Ten Hag stresses it's down to personal reasons, despite journalists saying otherwise. Never criticizes his absence. Always says, yeah, fine, he's in our plans. He says again, he's part of our plans after Ronaldo leaves the friendly against Rayo Vallecano early, leaves Old Trafford early, and Ten Hag basically gives a telling off to the journalists who ask about only Ronaldo. Then Ronaldo leaves the Tottenham game early. Ten Hag disciplines him, but quietly, and still insists he has a role to play, then reintegrates him a week later, gives him four consecutive starts and makes him captain. And then Ronaldo takes the final week of this first half of the season off, basically, seemingly feigning illness and instead sitting down for this interview. And that's before we even get on to last year's attempts to undermine the manager, the captain and the team, whatever. And I think you're right. Forgetting the whole way he's gone about it, had he done an external interview and criticised parts of the club in summer, or last season or before Ten Hag came in, or even now, I think many people would be on his side. But the fact he criticised Ten Hag or said Ten Hag showed him a lack of respect after all of those things I've just said, I think has just, I haven't seen any one United fan who sides with Ronaldo over that, because Ten Hag has built up some loyalty already from United fans, and rightly so, because he's done pretty much everything right so far.
Yeah, look, there's more anti-Glazer sentiment among this United fan base than anything else. And a lot of what Ronaldo was saying, again, from the clips that we've seen, we obviously haven't seen the whole interview, but a lot of what Ronaldo was saying in these clips is effectively calling out the Glazers, maybe not by name, but
yeah,
you know, he is calling out.
Bear in mind, Piers Morgan has basically released kind of the not all of, but the biggest bombshells of the interview, especially related to kind of the main top stuff at United. And the bombshell he released related to the Glazers was hardly huge, was it? He basically said, not enough has changed since I left the club the first time and came back. Which, yeah, is good. Good. It's always good to see a United player kind of call out that stuff and make it more widely known. But it's hardly a huge bombshell, is it?
No, of course. It's just Piers Morgan trying to spin everything to get as many views.
But I mean, my point is Ronaldo's hardly called out something in the most blatant terms or anything like that.
I mean, it's still more than what you would normally expect from a player at the club. And it's still a big statement to make. The problem is that, well, A, obviously he's called out Ten Hag, but also, like you mentioned, for the lack of self-awareness, he's doing this at a time when Erik Ten Hag seems to be rebuilding Man United in a more effective way than we've seen any manager post Sir Alex Ferguson. Where it's obviously still early days, but Ten Hag, I think, has cemented his authority quicker than any other manager since Sir Alex.
Yeah.
He is clearly improving this team and having us seeing a lot of progression from the start of the season. The club and the fan base are in a relatively good spot when it comes to what's happening on the pitch. And Ronaldo is quite clearly a detriment to that on the pitch. You know, it just screams of a bitter, at this point, old man trying to desperately cling on to that last bit of attention that he's just desperately craving. And he feels that, to be honest, to me, this screams of, rather than any sort of disrespect from Ten Hag, it screams of, I don't like the team succeeding without me and I need my spotlight back. And that's exactly what it was at the end of the Spurs game too.
And look, he won't have deliberately chosen the timing of this interview to come after Garnacho scored. But that being said, if he wanted this interview to be pulled and put out even 15 or 30 seconds later, that would have happened. If he wanted it to be put out a day later, that would have happened, or a month later, that would have happened. And he didn't, because instead he chose to overshadow the greatest day of his mentee's life so far, basically. There's more we could say, but I'm not sure it's worth our time that much.
The one thing I wanted to ask, I asked you a few months ago if you thought there was any chance Ronaldo's contract could be terminated. And I think we both sort of said probably not because of the commercial.
No, I didn't think there was. I think there is now, yeah, if that's your question.
Yeah.
I think there would be a chance, yeah. I don't think he'd be sacked, but I think United would consider mutual termination. But I think if United are going to go into that kind of negotiation about ending his contract early, they should be playing hardball and happily risk having to keep him on the books for another 6 months and paying him that to say, actually, you're the one who wants to leave. You can't find the club who'll pay for you. So you're not getting your full wages. You're not getting half your wages. You're getting this much, because he has disrespected the club rather than the other way around, I think.
United hold almost all the leverage in this situation.
That's what's mad about, isn't it? He's done it at the worst time he could have done.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what we say. Like, if he'd have done this last season, all the ball would have been in his court, because everyone could so clearly see what was going wrong at United. But he's done it at the worst possible time. And now the club has pretty much all the leverage, because Ronaldo is the one that clearly wants out. I think that is what we're, you know, clearly getting out of this interview.
But
and United hold all the cards to say, well, no, I'm not just going to let you leave. And if not, you're just going to sit here and not play. Because I don't think there's any way he's going to be making another appearance for United under Erik ten Hag at this point.
Yeah, I do agree. But ultimately, the point of this interview is to absolutely make sure he leaves in January. And I think ultimately that is what will happen, even though I agree with you that United holds the cards here. What's most telling about this, to sum up, is that our childhood hero and possibly the greatest or at least the most talented player to ever take to the pitch at Old Trafford, or one of, there can be a debate about that. But that being said, our childhood hero has done this effectively for the second time, having done similar in 2009. And am I sad? No. Am I surprised? No. Am I disappointed? A little, but hardly. It's an incredible final legacy for one of the club's greatest players to leave.
There'll always be, I think, something of a black mark next to Ronaldo's name in United history. And to be honest, there probably was slightly after what happened in 2009, but there was more.
I was going
to
say that there was already a little bit of a black mark. I think this.
But I think there was slightly more understanding at that point of wanting to move to Madrid and being a younger player. But I think at this point, you know, it is completely tarnished. And to be fair, I think, to be honest, we've all known for quite a while that Ronaldo didn't really love Man United. I think he loves Sir Alex Ferguson. I think that is genuine. But he never loved the club.
I'm sure there's lots of parts of it that he loved or still holds an affinity towards. But the truth is, he is the most important thing to himself. And that's exactly the same attribute that has made him the greatest, or one of the greatest footballers in history. Those two things can't be separated.
It's a great point. And I think it's a reason why you see a lot of the very, very best athletes in various sports. It's the ending of their career and how they go out is difficult. And it's often messy, because it's difficult to go from having been the best and undoubtedly the best and having a mentality that allows you to be the best to not being at that level and having to maybe rein that mentality, that ego in a little bit. It is difficult. And I have sympathy for Ronaldo for that, but I have no sympathy for the way he's gone about handling it.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Let's go to our first guess the player clue. It's me setting a clue this week, you guessing. As a reminder for the very basic rules, there are three clues throughout the show. You want to guess it as quickly as possible. You get more points the quicker you guess it. I'll give you your first clue.
Right.
I'm a 59-year-old ex-Manchester United player currently managing in the Football League. I am a 59-year-old ex-Manchester United player currently managing in the Football League.
Okay, so let me try and piece this together. So 59, someone who probably retired.
Definitely retired.
So probably retired around 2000, I would guess, from football. Obviously, doesn't mean you left United at that point. Okay, and you said currently managing in the Football League.
So that I'm counting the Football League as the top four divisions, even though technically the Premier League isn't part of it, but that's kind of what I mean by that.
Yeah.
You can think about it for a little bit and you can still guess after.
Yeah, I don't have a guess. I don't have a guess. I've got a few names floating around, but
okay,
I don't have a guess.
Okay, let's talk quickly about the rest of the game at Fulham. We've spoken about Garnacho's goal and Garnacho. The first goal was a deserved one for Eriksen. He absolutely should have had another one and made that game a lot more comfortable. But that first goal was really good and showed especially the value of Casemiro, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the goal is everything that we've wanted from this United team. Win the ball high up the pitch and then be good in those attacking transitions. We've said plenty of times this season that we are very good in attacking transitions and very bad in defensive ones. And we saw the good part of that to the tee.
And the bad part, should be said. The two goals for United and Fulham were remarkably similar in the fact that they both came from a team capitalising on the opposition's fullbacks being massively high up and no one recovering well enough. They were obviously not the same goal, but the circumstances in which they arose were remarkably similar.
Well, yeah, and I think it carries on this theme that throughout the last kind of 2 or 3 weeks, felt like we haven't really learned that much more about this United team because it's been a repeat of stuff we've already known. We said that after the Villa game, and it's the same against Fulham too. But the first goal, it's very similar in nature really to the first goal against Everton too. You know, Casemiro winning the ball back and then United quickly spinning that into a good attack. I think it also shows the value of Anthony Martial as well, because he didn't do anything spectacular in that attack. You know, he received a pass in space and turned, took a few touches dribbling forward and played an easy pass into Fernandes. But just that ability to receive the ball and turn, drive forward and play in a teammate is something that Martial does bring us that our other forwards don't. And it's just some kind of simple things like that.
We look so much better with him, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, the last two games with him up front in the League Cup against Villa and then against Fulham yesterday, it wasn't perfect all the time, but that threat in behind is so, so much bigger. And it seemed like a clear plan in both of those games from United. Throughout the first half, you know, every time we got the ball, we looked dangerous against Fulham in terms of that ball over the top. In behind, we didn't always come off, but, you know, Shaw played one down the side into Rashford that Martial and him probably should have done better with. There was a couple from Martinez that either Martial didn't quite control or a little bit out of reach. You know, there's plenty of opportunities that United are creating in that sense, and it comes from having just much better movement up front that Martial provides us.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that we sat quite deep at Craven Cottage, and I thought that was I don't know whether it's a good thing or just an interesting thing, but I don't think it's because that's how Ten Hag wants United to play, but I think it showed just how far his pragmatism has gone in this first half of the season, that I think the reason was because without Ronaldo or Anthony or Sancho, Alanga was the obvious option to start, and he knew that the only real way to get something out of Alanga is to give him space in behind, as we were kind of referencing earlier in our Garnacho chat. So we dropped deep to ensure that we could create that space. And you just mentioned the ball, frequent balls over the top were because of that as well. So I thought that was interesting. We did show a bit of weakness in depth. Terrell Malacia copes well. It wasn't the prettiest right back display. We really struggled down that right hand side. But more than a comment on his performance, it shows good strength of character and trust from Ten Hag to put him in that very unfamiliar position. It was also incredibly weird watching a left-footed right-back. I've seen plenty of right-footed left-backs. A left-footed right-back was felt just baffling to watch.
It's so odd. It's such a kind of a jarring experience watching a fullback kind of on the wrong side of the pitch trying to play. I mean, we've seen it a few times for United before, but not very often.
But this one, being left-back, it seems all right. Is something about the fact, because like Dennis Irwin did it, Brandon Williams has done it in the more recent past.
The great Ashley Young.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I mean, I don't know. Whatever it is, it did hinder us a lot because, to be fair, before I say this, I think Malacia did well in the second half and he coped a lot better in the second half.
Agreed,
The play stopped coming down his side as often. But I think in defence, Fulham clearly targeted him and Willian started the game really well, which is also just an odd throwback watching Willian still play in the Premier League. But that's an aside. But I think the biggest thing was in our build-up as well. You know, Elanga obviously isn't sort of the best option we have at right winger, and the combination of him and Malacia on that right side, we just weren't able to progress the ball at all down that side of the pitch because it would come into Malacia, and because of the angle that he would have to pass the ball out wide with his left foot, for Elanga to be able to be in a position to receive the ball, he had to come so short, so deep. So to make that angle when Malassi could play the pass. And he just didn't want to. He was trying to spin in behind.
Yeah.
The ball just wasn't on.
That being said, that is obviously a short-term thing.
Yeah.
And I thought sometimes the way we played out from the back was really good. I think the one example I'm thinking of maybe must have been in the last 10 minutes or so was after McTominay had come on. Really good play out from the back, including a great turn and pass out wide from McTominay. He then got on the end of a header, which he 100% should have scored. But it was a great move and a sign of the improvement we've made in terms of playing out from the back, from even from the players you might
not expect. There were a few great passes from Martinez into Eriksen through the lines as well.
Yeah. The McTominay sub, Ten Hag said afterwards that the reason he brought him on, he said, I want to bring more power in midfield. Scott is a ball-winning type, power type, and he can make runs in front. Again, it was interesting that McTominay came on, for an attacker, for Alanga, but then he also actually played that far forward. He was basically playing off Martial as a second striker. And it's really interesting that Ten Hag sees him like that. Especially interesting because he plays in defence for Scotland, previously been playing in midfield for United, and it now looks like his main role under Ten Hag will sometimes be in midfield, but also playing a lot higher up the pitch, which I can't think of any other examples of players who've had such a contrast between club and country.
It's very position. Odd. I've got to say, I'm not a huge fan of what Ten Hag does with these subs with McTominay and Fred whenever they've played and pushing them so high up the pitch. I do understand the desire to keep Eriksen deeper because I think there is, you know, I've been plenty critical of United for a long time about how badly we see out games. And there is definitely an argument to say that having a player like Eriksen deeper will help us not go into that kind of panic mode where we're just hoofing it every time we win the ball back, and it will help us retain possession. But I don't think the way to kind of do it is to push McTominay or Fred into a number 10 role. To be honest, I'd rather them end up playing out wide, where at least I feel like the sort of industry is useful at that point. But playing them as a number 10, it just stops so much of our counter-attacking potential. McTominay didn't do that badly when he came on. He was fine. But it's just, he's just not a natural.
I think, I agree. I think actually he has some really good qualities in those areas, and his physical presence is really useful, both in coming back to defend and also being an outlet up there and a presence in the box. But I think it restricts us, because even then with a three-man midfield, we still couldn't hold the ball that well. And it takes, crucially, it takes Bruno Fernandes out of his best position, stops us having good width because now Bruno's there instead of a winger, and it makes Malassi's job a bit harder as well, or in this particular example.
Yeah, exactly. And the biggest thing is that, especially at that point in the game, when we were drawing, not losing, is that we still need to be going forward and creating chances ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned that one attack where McTominay did do really well, played a great ball out to Garnacho, but there was a lot of other times where he received the ball and he just doesn't see the field, the pitch, the way that someone like Bruno Fernandes does. And that's not a criticism of McTominay, it's just not his role. And so when we still need a goal, why would you take your most creative player out of the most creative part of the pitch? You know, I'd rather us, if we really want to bring McTominay on, I'd sort of rather us go to a flat three-man midfield with McTominay, Eriksen, Casemiro. So you still retain Eriksen in those deeper roles, but you don't have McTominay being kind of basically our main creative player. I know that can sort of wreak some havoc with the balance of the team further up the pitch, because you'd probably have Bruno coming too far inside. But, you know, whatever it is, I understand why Ten Hag is doing it, but especially when we're drawing and not winning, I don't love bringing McTominay into that role.
Yeah. On the other hand, it definitely does feel like a short-term solution. I don't think we'll see it too much longer happening when players come back from injury, but also just long-term under Ten Hag. The final thing I'll say on the game, Fernandes speaking out on Qatar afterwards was top stuff from him, and adds to a glowing list of, I don't know what the word is, not recommendations, but reviews of Bruno Fernandes' behaviour and character.
Yeah,
he's a properly good person, as far as everything I've heard.
I've got to say, I think his, at least publicly, it seems like his leadership has gone up a notch this season as well. He's always been clearly quite a figure that is, he's always clearly been a leadership figure since he came to United. But I think at times he's been maybe a little bit petulant, and it feels like he's someone, like we saw in the Europa League final, where he had a bit of a doozy with Lindelof on the pitch. He feels like someone that could maybe not be toxic, but maybe be a little bit too much.
I like that on the pitch. It's high expectations is what you need from a leading player.
I mean, yeah, and that's what he's brought. But I think there are times when players like that can rub other teammates up the wrong way. But it feels like Fernandes has really upped his leadership another level this season. And he really has kind of taken on that mantle for this team, when I think there was, it would have been very easy for this team to have a bit of a leadership vacuum this season with Maguire not playing, Ronaldo not playing very well. And Bruno has really, really stepped up to the plate in that role.
No, yeah, really has stepped up. And I would expect will be United captain within the next 6 months. We all get your second guest supplier clue, if you're ready.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, first one was, I'm a 59-year-old ex-Manchester United player currently managing the Football League. Second clue, I had two spells at United, totaling 13 years in the first team. I had two spells at United, totaling 13 years in the first team.
Okay, so I'm actually not 100% sure if this person is still managing a team currently, but he was in my head after the first clue, because I know he has been a manager for a long time, and he fits the second clue. So my guess is going to be Mark Hughes.
Spot on. He is managing. He's at Bradford City and doing very well as it goes. I'm going to check exactly where they are in the table. But yeah, I think now I was just thinking maybe we should be setting a par for like a par score for each of our clues. Cause I was thinking that's probably a par two.
Yeah.
Some are definitely par threes. That was kind of on the borderline. But I think the two spells, is that what gave it away?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I said, he was in my head anyway from the first one, because just the age and the timeline seemed to fit. And I wasn't 100% sure if he was currently managing, but I know he has been a manager for a long time. And then, yeah, the two spells was what, because I couldn't really think of anyone else. Like, there wasn't anyone else at that kind of age that would currently be managing off the top of my head. So that's kind of what made me think of him. And then, yeah, the two spells was...
Steve Bruce, I would expect, is a similar age, but...
That's a good point, actually. In my head, Steve Bruce is a lot older than Mark Hughes because of the way they look, but actually that's a good point. They're probably
appearances, isn't it? But yeah, Mark Hughes doing very well. I love the fact he took on the challenge of Bradford, having formerly been a good Premier League manager, to take on the challenge of Bradford. I loved. He's got stuck in and they're fourth in League Two right now. So yeah, wow, he's doing very well there. I'll tell you what the final clue is after quick youth and loan roundup. United under-18s played Manchester City on Saturday, and City captain Nico O'Reilly broke the deadlock before halftime. Then Ethan Williams equalised for United, one possession back high up, finished past George Murray Jones for a fifth goal in five games for him. Manny Norkett provided a top header to then put United ahead 2-1 after good work from Tyler Fredrickson on the wing in an unfamiliar position for him that he did well in. And then James Nolan converted from the penalty spot for a third. City got on back late on after Jack Kingdon had been sent off, but United 3-2 winners, and it's a really good win that. Lots of injuries and absentees, lots of the more senior players eligible for under-18s football who were playing in the under-21s. So that's a really impressive win for Travis Binion's side against a good City team. On the subject of under-21s, they played on Friday night against Monaco in the second game of the Premier League International Cup at Old Trafford. They'd drawn with Sparta Prague in the first game and lost this one 2-0. I was at the first half before heading to a gig nearby. First half was decent enough, but with little action. And then in the second half, United missed two good opportunities, but Monaco were the better side and deserved to win. As for United women, Ella Toon has signed a new contract until 2026, which is definitely good news. We're in a women's international break right now. There are 14 United players representing their countries. Toon scored for England against Japan in a 4-0 win. Alessia Russo and Mary Earp started that game as well. Nikita Paris and Katie Zellum came off the bench late on, but Maya Letizia, who is also in the squad, hasn't yet made her debut, may get that soon. In terms of loan news, well, Ahmad leading the loan news once again. A brilliant counter-attack goal for Sunderland, finished off emphatically with his left foot. And I think it's worth hearing Tony Mowbray's thoughts again, the manager. He said this after Sunderland beat Birmingham City 2-1. He said, "I think there's an understanding now that this kid's got real talent and deserves to be well respected within the football team. In training, he's been unbelievable with the ball, how fast he is, how direct he is. You look at his physical data in every one of the last three or four games, and he's had the highest distance covered, the highest sprint distance, the highest intensity energy runs. He played and scored a wonderful goal, but we see him do it every day." It's a glowing review from Tony Mowbray, and I'm really glad to see Ahmad doing well. And that's exciting for United, because there is clearly talent there. If he can fulfil his potential, that will be big. There were a few other players in action, but nothing quite as noteworthy as that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Jack, the final clue for Guess the Player would have been, you guessed Mark Hughes, the final clue would have been, I scored the winning goals in the Cup Winners' Cup final against Barcelona, which I think would have just put the nail in, would have made it fairly obvious.
Yeah, I would have got it after that one for sure. But happy that I got it after two.
I can't exactly remember the score each of us are on, but...
I think we were both on three after two rounds each. So I'm now on five, but you've obviously got... A guess in hand, I guess we can say it.
A guess in hand, yes.
I was just also looking up Mark Hughes' like managerial time. I didn't realise he's been out of management for 4 years. I feel somewhat vindicated that I didn't realise he was back in management.
Yeah, yeah. But he joined Bradford. He's been there about a year now, hasn't he?
Let's see.
I think. Time has moved so strangely over the last couple of years, and especially this football season in particular. That
he's been there since February.
Yeah, okay. So nearing about 9 months. Yeah.
I didn't realise he was born in, I knew he's from Wales, obviously, but I didn't know he was born in Wrexham. I wonder if we could see him managing Wrexham in the championship in a few years' time.
Yeah, that would be very possible. Interesting. Yeah. We'll wrap up. There's no game to preview. So we can tell you what we're going to be doing over the next few weeks before United return in a month and 6 days time against Burnley, possibly 7 days. So 4 or 5 weeks against Burnley in the League Cup. Plan's not fully formulated yet, but you can expect a couple of episodes related to the World Cup, looking at how United players are doing, our thoughts on how the tournament's going, any big storylines. But probably more interesting than that, we'll have one episode of a proper kind of not half season, but review of Erik ten Hag's work at Manchester United so far with at least Jack, me and Kane Smith, who's been on the podcast several times this season already, talking about various things, his tactics, the way he's brought through young players, the results, the way he's handled the media and Ronaldo, and maybe a couple of other guests as well. We'll also have a episode looking at how the women's team have been doing, how United women have been doing over the first half of the season, competing at the moment for the Women's Super League title, but with a main aim of qualifying for the top, or finishing in the top three and therefore qualifying for the Champions League. They play at Old Trafford. They now have one game a season at Old Trafford. They play at Old Trafford on the 3rd of December. So we'll probably, that'll be out in the week before that game, looking at United women with a couple of experts, WSL experts and journalists who cover United in the WSL. And we'll probably, and let us know if you want this or if you're not that interested, we'll probably have a halfway point academy season review as well. Other than that, Jack, World Cup's coming up. Two short answers to this, please. Are you excited yet? And who are you backing to win?
I'm sort of like 60% excitement, I think.
Okay, yeah, and I think I'm pretty similar.
I think I'm sure I won't fail. Like, there's no way I won't be excited once the games start. But for now, it feels a little strange still. Backing to win, I think I'm going to go Brazil. It's been a while. It's been, what, 24 years since they won it? That's way too long for Brazil.
I think I have four favourites: Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay and Spain. I'm backing Argentina to win it. I think Uruguay are... I mean, Uruguay are kind of perennial dark horses, even though they've won the World Cup twice and are a great footballing nation. But they have... The difference between Uruguay and Spain, I guess, is Spain aren't really... I don't think Spain are expected by that many people as favourites, but I don't think Spain can ever be considered dark horses, whereas I don't think Uruguay can ever be considered not dark horses, because their population is so small that if they're going to do well, they have to be dark horses. That's how
Uruguay,
it works in my
Uruguay
head.
Is sort of like the Denmark of South America.
Yeah.
I feel like Denmark always get the same treatment in Euros and stuff, where the team is actually quite good, so probably shouldn't be considered dark horses, but they're sort of this like footballing nation that isn't quite up there with you know, the Brazils and the Argentinas and the Germanys and England.
But that's kind of, Uruguay is up there. They're two-time World Cup winners.
Yeah.
It's just the fact their population is so small that I don't think you can ever consider them anything but dark horses, because it would be incredible if they won another World Cup. It was one thing winning it when there were kind of six or eight teams playing it in 1930. It's another thing winning it now. It would be amazing, but they've got a really good team.
Last question.
But I'm back in Argentina.
How well are England going to do?
My difficulty in answering that is so much of it's dependent on the draw, and I haven't studied the routes that England might take. You know what I mean?
Kind
of route England might take if they win. So I think there's one route where we have to play France and Argentina, isn't there? In theory, have to play.
I think the most likely scenario,
I think we'd go out to Argentina.
So I think I could be wrong on this, but I think when I looked at it, I think the most likely scenario is that we would play France in the quarterfinal, I think.
Okay.
And then maybe it's Argentina in the semis.
Is it potentially Senegal in the round of 16? I can't remember exactly. The announcement of the England squad did get me a bit more. That was kind of the first bit of excitement I've had for the tournament. But it does feel very... It's so rubbish, isn't it? To state the bleeding obvious. But I think I think the fact Reece James isn't there is a blow. I think if Kyle Walker can't play as well, that's a much bigger blow. I just think England's weaknesses, and the centre-backs are a lot less certain than they were at the Euros or even in the 2018 World Cup. I think Southgate's made an error over the last year not trying out enough players who deserved opportunities, but the attacking talent in England's team is amazing, and the variety of attacking talent. If you think of, you've got the Foden and Grealish type players, compare them to the Saka and Rashford type players. It's a completely different style of forward that will cause massive problems for any defence. So the attacking talent's there, absolutely, but going to be very reliant on Bellingham and Rice. And if either of them get a knock or a suspension for a crucial game, then I wouldn't be hugely confident. So I think quarterfinals I'll predict for England, regardless of draw. But we should be doing better than that. This England team should be getting to the semi-final. Also, the temperature in Qatar will also be a lot more normal for Brazil and Argentina and Uruguay and Spain than England,
think
Germany,
this should,
France.
This should really, in sort of the development of this generation of England team, this should be their best chance of winning a major trophy. Maybe the Euros because it's the easier competition, but 2018 World Cup was clearly the starting point for this team.
Yeah.
We only really got to the semi-final because of a very favourable draw. It was mainly a very young team. We're now 4 years on from that. This team has gone through a long cycle, played together a lot. There's a lot of familiarity among this squad, but it feels like a lot has happened over the last year that's made you a lot less confident in this England team, whether it's players losing form, injuries.
It's partly, if you think about the key players, players losing form. If you think about the key players, particularly Sterling and Maguire, I'm using for this, who have lost form. Calvin Phillips not being able to play. He's going, which I think is a brave decision, but probably the right one from Southgate. But there's three... That's an absolute spine of England's teams at the Euros.
Form, who's pretty much a guaranteed starter at this point.
Yeah. On the other hand, Luke Shaw coming into form's massive. And I thought the other thing, final thing to wrap up, but the game against Fulham again, we were talking about Garnacho's touch. Luke Shaw's touch is such an indicator of how well he's playing. And we've spoken about this a few times over the last few years, but his touch when he's confident is one of the best in football. Not necessarily that he can bring down a ball from 100 feet and it be perfect. Not that kind of touch like some players can. The way he sets up the next action is absolute perfection. It is exactly what I'd show any young player. When Shaw's in form, his first touch is the most positive thing you'll ever see. When he's out of form or out of confidence, he always comes back, falls back on that old Van Gaal teachings. But at the moment, it's very good.
He's quietly having a very good season without grabbing too many headlines.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if England are going to win the World Cup, or if England are even going to get to the semi-final or final, Luke Shaw will win a game with a moment at some point en route to that. And on that positive United note, let's wrap up.
My England prediction will be a semi-final with a penalty shootout win in there, but then a penalty shootout loss in the semi-final.
Oof, I'd rather not go through it at all, really.
I mean, so would I, but you know it's coming.
yeah. And on that much less positive note, let's actually wrap up. Thank you very much for listening to this, what has turned into a bumper episode of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. Much appreciated. Hope you've enjoyed this first almost half, one third of the season so far listening to the show. If you have, you can support the podcast in two ways. One, by signing up to become a patron. Head to our Twitter at UTD Weekly Pod, POD at the end, for information about how to do that for as little as £1.50 a month. Or just leave us a review on whatever podcast app you use. That's massively helpful, surprisingly helpful. But yeah, thank you for listening. For more from Jack over the next week or so, you can find him on Twitter at
UTD Tate, T-A-I-T.
I'm at Harry Robinson 64, and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod, POD at the end. We're going to head into a patron Q&A that patrons get at the end of every episode with a couple of questions. So until we speak to you next time, goodbye for now. Have a great week.
Network.